Where did everybody go? Okay. Enough of the comedy. We're behind schedule, as I said. We've got a presentation from Tom Neese. Ground Fish Oversight Committee Report, Tab 3. I'll turn it over to Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will be very brief. The committee has not met since our meeting prior to the November meeting. Today, our only action would be to identify a candidate for the Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder Rebuilding Strategy. Behind your tab, there are two important documents. One is the Groundfish PDT document from January 15th, and the other is the presentation that Tom is going to give, and then we'll walk through a council decision. Tom?
Good afternoon. If you recall, in November, the council voted to consider a new rebuilding strategy for Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder. In this presentation, I'm going to review the current strategy, offer a suggested process for changes, and then talk a little bit about possible alternatives. Initially, what I had hoped for to getting out of this meeting was council concurrence with the process that we're proposing here for making the change. And the council may also want to consider narrowing the alternatives that we will consider. As Rip pointed out, the committee has not met, so there are no committee recommendations. First, I'd like to review the current strategy. We were notified by the service that the stock was declared overfished in 2005. With the regulations in place at the time, we had to implement a rebuilding strategy with 1 year of the notification. The strategy has been somewhat occasionally misrepresented. In Framework 42, we promoted rebuilding by 2014, which was an 8-year rebuilding period, not a 7-year, as commonly is said. We selected a 75% probability of success to guide our choices in EFS. We chose an adaptive strategy, which meant we fished at FMSY, which in the U.S.-Canada agreement is often referred to as F-reference, from 2006 to 2008, and then we were going to adjust as necessary. When we did the original forecast in Framework 42, we estimated that the F-rebuild for the 2009 to 2014 period would be in the range of 0.135 to 0.16. Under the most recent assessments, and we'll talk more about that later, the current F-rebuild to rebuild by then is on the order of 0.02 to 0.085, so quite a bit lower than what we thought it would be when we did Framework 42. So then the next question is, why are we considering a change now? I think there's a couple reasons. The stock is improving, as you can see from this graph of stock biomass that was prepared based on the last track. There's a but in there that I'll get to a little bit more detail. I would point out that there are two lines on this chart. We really have two assessment runs with no preference expressed for either one. They are referred to as an including run and an excluding run. They relate to treatment of the Canadian surveys. The reasons proposed for this is to benefit from the rebuilding. You can see that under either assessment, the stock appears to be at a higher size than it's been for much of the time period and may, in fact, be higher than we've seen since the early 70s. In addition to that, we've had some problems with the very strict rebuilding strategy and trying to reach agreement with the Canadians on catch levels for Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder. So a change might help facilitate cooperation on catch levels. Getting back to the but on the stock improving, I want to highlight some comments from the track. There was more uncertainty in this assessment than previous assessments due to the survey data, and they're referring primarily to the Canadian survey data, which had, for 2 years in a row, one very large toe. The track also noted there's truncated age structure in the bottom trawl surveys, and changes in distribution indicate current resource productivity is lower than historic levels. The PDT went on to point out to the SSC that several elements of the assessment suggest caution. First, the track cautions that the assessment is less certain. I just pointed that out. Second, both model formulations indicate rapidly increasing stock size since 2005. Any continued rapid growth is less certain because of poor recruitment in 2007. Third, since the end of the rebuilding period is approaching, projected rebuilding success is sensitive to estimates of recruits. And finally, the assessment may be acquiring a retrospective pattern when estimating fishing mortality. I'd like to add another point to that, and that this is just sort of completely anecdotal, but I'll point out that I took this chart, stripped off all the numbers, showed it to somebody who follows groundfish, and said, "What's this chart of?" And he said, "That's easy. That's the Georges Bank Yellowtail assessment in 2004. I said, "Wrong." And if anybody remembers, we had a chart that looked very similar to this in 2004, and it turned out that the estimates of biomass have turned out to be a lot lower afterwards. So when it comes to the process, what we are proposing for the process is that today the council may want to consider nearing the alternative strategies that will be considered. In July of 2010, there's another track assessment, which will give us more information on the current stock size. So we'd like to wait until after that track assessment to revise the rebuilding strategies and have final approval in November 2010 of a proposed action, most probably a framework document. We will need at least a framework to make this change. We're suspecting that with the pollock assessment, there may be some other changes that might prove necessary for pollock, and if there are any other ACLs that need to be revised, we can wrap them all up. This process gives us two advantages. One, we get another data point on what the stock really looks like in the 2010 assessment. The other, it narrows the council's workload because we'll only submit one document towards the end of the year. It allows us to implement everything in the beginning of 2011 altogether so that it all fits. We have some issues to resolve with respect to timing of, you know, when we go to the SSC, how does this fit into the TMGC. I'm not really going to get into those today. But this is sort of the outline of the process we're proposing. So in order to get this started, the PDT took a look, and we feel that we define our strategies by the ending date and the probability of success that we're trying to use to guide the choice of mortality. The probability of success cannot be less than 50%. Some of us losers, it's considerably lower than that. The council has used 75% as the goal for all strategies since Framework 42. So we narrowed it down to 50% and 75%, and then the 3 years. So you've really got six choices here with a current strategy at the 75%. This doesn't highlight the complexity we face with having two possible assessments, neither one of which is preferred, no idea when or if one may prove more accurate than the other. This is explained in more detail in the PDT report. We are cautiously optimistic that in 2010 the track will provide us results from either one assessment or they will come up with a way to weight the two assessments so we really only have one result that we have to deal with. But that work is ongoing and we won't know until the summer whether it's successful or not. So when the PDT started looking at this, we ran the projections off both assessment models to compare the six possible strategies shown. And one thing that I didn't mention is we looked at this and we said, okay, what the council is trying to do here is rebuild at an acceptable rate, meaning a legal rate that is consistent with the council's choice of rebuilding goals, but also wants to try and increase catches because it seems that that's the binding part for everyone here. So we ran it, and the first thing we looked at is the biological results of the projections, and these are in detail once again in the PDT report. We would point out that if you're talking about the biological results, if you go to a strategy that takes the median probability and the maximum period, it leaves you little room for adjustment if your progress lags that rebuilding period. So in other words, if you go to 2016, 50%, and you start to fall behind, you don't have a lot of choices on how you react. The other thing we note is that if the excluding assessment proves to be correct, this is the assessment that tends to give the lower biomass estimates, it doesn't look like we can be rebuilt by 2014 at a 75% subject to our 2010 catch assumption, which, of course, could be an error. We assumed about 2,000 metric tons based on our TAC and what the Canadians have selected on their TAC. The other thing we note is that if the excluding assessment is correct again, if you choose the strategy of 2015 by 75%, you don't wind up with increased catches. So that doesn't seem to be the approach that would be reasonable given what we're trying to do here. when you look at the biological impacts alone that we've described in this slide, I think you really have, instead of six choices, you really have only four choices, one of which is the current rebuilding strategy. But that's just looking at the biological impacts. We also took a look at the economic impacts in a very simplified way. We took a look at the catch-out pits, turned it into revenues. We only evaluated the revenues based on the value of the yellowtail. We didn't try and integrate this with the scallop fishery. And then we developed the catch streams with a net present value over, I believe, it's the seven-year period of the projections. The results are robust to whatever you assume for the discount rate. Generally, we show the rankings here. The rankings are somewhat similar. Whether it's the excluding model or the including model is your choice. Generally speaking, a medium probability returns higher net present value. The reason for that is it gives you higher catches in the near years, which tend to outweigh the gains you get down the road when you discount it under net present value. Once again, generally speaking, the longer periods return higher net present value. But to put these in context, and the actual numbers are in the PDT report again, in any given assessment model, the difference between the high and low is about $10 to $12 million over 7 years of the projection. So these are not really huge differences when you talk about this over a seven-year period. And that's between the extremes. If you start shading between one and two, the differences are not that large. So then the PDT punted, bluntly. The PDT looked at this information and said, to be honest, at this point there doesn't seem to be enough information for the PDT to recommend an alternative based on some objective basis. We felt that once we have the assessment update in 2010 in the summer, that we'll be able to do a better job, and there may be a better reason for choosing one of these alternatives or another. Having said that, it's possible that the council may have policy reasons to try and narrow the list of alternatives. Does the list have to be absolutely narrowed today? No, not really. It cuts down our workload a little bit later in the year, but there's nothing urgent. We really are not going to do anything about this to speak of until the assessments come in, assuming the council agrees with that process that I suggested earlier. So it's not absolutely essential for the council to narrow the list of alternatives. If you do choose to narrow the list of alternatives, then it will help us a little bit down the road, because the track meets in July, which means those results will probably be available sometime in August, and we'll have basically the September council meeting and the November council meeting to work through all these issues and finalize them so that we can vote by November. So, you know, there is some advantage if the list of alternatives is narrowed, because it cuts the workload down slightly. And that concludes my presentation. I'm willing to take any questions that you may have.
Thanks, Tom. The dollar values, that's strictly on the value of yellowtail. It doesn't factor in yellowtail as a choke species in a sector or anything along that line.
That's correct. Basically, for this analysis, all we did was apply some dollar per pound of yellowtail and plug it in to see the changes in yellowtail. Frankly, we talked a little bit about trying to roll in the impact on scallops, which yellowtail as a choke species on the scallop fishery tends to outweigh anything that happens to the groundfish fishery. But with all the uncertainties of not knowing what the scallop management strategy was going to be, or what it's going to be over the length of the projection period, we felt we really didn't have enough information to even start guessing at that.
Council? David?
Tom, on table six, which is basically the kind of the cut to the chase table from where I sit, is there anything here that really surprises you? I mean, in other words, it looks to me like if we pick the strategy with the least chance of success, 50% versus 75, and we put the rebuilding period out there the longest, we get the most revenue. Is that, you know, am I misreading this somehow? Or?
No, you're reading it exactly correctly. If you look at economic impacts and ignore, biological impacts and risk of not rebuilding in time and how you might want to react, the longest period and the medium probability give you the most catches over the 7-year period of the projection. Now, if we would have ran the projection out further, I really don't think it would have changed these results much, if at all. I think the ordinal ranking would still be the same.
Okay, I might have another question, but I got to think for just a second.
Anyone else? Dr. Pierce, then Jim.
Yeah, Tom, looking at the report to the Groundfish Committee from the plant development team, you clearly are very frank regarding not knowing which option to pick, which direction to go. You do, however, make a couple of important points that caught my attention, and that's on page 2, number 5. End of that paragraph, it says, considerable yield is sacrificed if the excluding model is assumed correct and the including results prove more accurate. The track is coming up in July. I'm assuming we'll be in a position by then, hopefully, to get a better handle on whether we should include or exclude. I'm aware of there being more work done. More work has been done on Georges Bank Yellowtail that likely will factor into this assessment work. Brian Rothschild, I believe, has done some work on Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder rebuilding. His research, his analyses, I suspect, will be of use. We have a new member of the council staff, Jessica. She just finished her graduate work, defended that work regarding Georges Bank Yellowtail. Very interesting findings, to say the least. It gives me a reason to be very encouraged about the abundance of yellowtail flounder on Georges Bank. That is my leaning on going in the positive direction as opposed to the negative direction. So I'm not prepared to offer up any particular preference for either of these options. I'm not prepared to narrow down the options at this time, but I know that there will be information that will help us, certainly help the plant development team be more confident in what survey to use, and then that'll help us make a choice as to which way we should go. So, thanks.
Jim Adler?
Yeah, a couple of points. Tom, on your economic impacts, I mean, I think to just measure the impacts of yellowtail is really kind of looking at this in a vacuum. We already know we've given up substantial yields of other stocks because of the rebuilding timelines and the probabilities that we've picked on yellowtails, and the reason we know that is that we've shut down the area because of yellowtail catch, I think it was last year. We've changed gear restrictions this year in trying to adhere to this rebuilding strategy. So I really think we need to, when you do your economic analysis, try to figure out a way of quantifying the loss yield of other fisheries in some form, because we know it's real. It's not something where we have to speculate that it's happened. We know that we are losing yield of other fisheries, including scallops, because of rebuilding strategies we have here. So that's one point. The second point I notice is that we cannot rebuild by 2014 with 75% probabilities. So that brings us, the council, to a dilemma. What happens if we get another year or another assessment and we understand that at this 8-year rebuild and at 75% probability, we can't get to there? And I just want to note that I saw a similar dilemma in crab on the West Coast, in which they realized that if to stay on their 10-year rebuilds or their 8-year rebuild, that it was going to have a significant cost to the industry. So what they did is they started a whole new rebuild thing and went out an additional 5 years in order that the industry could continue to function. I think I have that close enough to write for this argument. So the question is, just in the abstract, what happens in this case? By the time we deal with this, we're only 2 years away from, we'll only be 2 years or 3 years away from when we're supposed to have rebuilt, and we can't get there. So do we continue to hammer the industry knowing you can't get there. So that, I guess that's a question probably of the service or of us. And then there's one other item that we know is that by having this, I will call it an aggressive rebuild strategy of 8 years and 75% probability, where it's causing us great problems with our U.S.-Canada agreement. And if that agreement, it hasn't yet, but it was close, if that agreement was to fall apart, then we would revert back to having no controls, not no controls, but you could revert back to a situation where both sides were overfishing, and that's not what we want. You know, I've been on that committee since I got on the council, I believe, and we think that that committee and the strategies of managing jointly the stocks that go across our boundaries has worked to both sides' benefits. So it would be beneficial for us to solve this problem so that we can continue to have that agreement remain a viable option for joint management of transboundary stocks. Pat Kirkle.
Thanks. Before I get to my comments, I guess, to answer, I think, a couple of Jim's questions. If we get into a situation where we can no longer rebuild by the end of the rebuilding period, I believe what the national standard guidelines say is you hold it at rebuild until you do rebuild, basically. There are some very limited circumstances where rebuilding time periods have been extended beyond the 10 years. The simplest case, for me anyway, requires that you find that even if you had set fishing mortality to zero at the beginning of the rebuilding program, you couldn't have rebuilt in 10 years. So it's sort of a retrospective look at whether or not your original assumptions were incorrect. And I don't think that's the situation here. Comments on the PDT's presentation, I completely agree with their conclusion that it's too risky, effectively too risky, to choose the 2016 and the 50%. And I certainly think that's one option that's worth considering eliminating. I would also argue that we should eliminate the 50% from the other options, frankly. I strongly advise the council against going back to a 50% strategy, this sort of knife-edge strategy where we only have a half likelihood of success. And I know the PDT is... analysis, anyways, leaning somewhere towards the 2015 and 50%, but that's only one additional year. I don't know that that's effectively different than choosing 2016 and 50%. There's still not time to react to it and time to correct the situation if, in fact, you're not going to rebuild in time. If we look at the timeline on that, we'd see that we wouldn't know till 2016 that, in fact, we didn't achieve rebuilding by the 2015, and then it's too late. So I have a lot of concerns about going back to a 50% probability of success level.
Dave Gith.
Yeah. Tom, basically this is the same risk-reward thing we just went through for 6 hours this morning. It's not terribly different. And my question is, if we had done this same analysis in 2004, and we may have actually done it, what would those numbers, maybe you probably can't answer this now, but maybe you could go back and run it if it hasn't been done. What would those numbers look like now? In other words, I'm trying to gauge the risk-reward here. In other words, in 2004, we took what we thought was very minimal risk with Georges Bank Yellowtail, and we got what I would consider to be a rather minimal reward for that risk we took. And then, you know, several years later, not only did we not get a reward, we got a huge fine. We got a huge penalty. And that's what I'm trying to assess here. I want to make sure we don't fall into that penalty strategy again. Do you understand what I'm asking?
Well, I think I understand what you're asking. This is complicated a little bit because in the case of this stock, we've had some issues with the assessment that have changed over time. And I'm not quite sure that any risk analysis we would have done in 2005 when we were trying to develop this rebuilding strategy would have had the ability to predict some of the changes in the assessment that we had. Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder is the first assessment that I believe where we split the survey time series in order to try and resolve the retrospective pattern within the assessment. And if I recall correctly, when we looked at the 2005 assessment results, that was either the first or second year where they had split the survey. And if you go back and look at Framework 42, I gave you a range of numbers, and the reason was because there were basically two assessment models floating around, and we didn't know which one was right. There was one with a split survey, I believe, and one without it. Well, here we are a bunch of years later, and we now have two assessments, and they're two different assessments. They're not really two assessments. They're two different model runs where they treat some unusual survey catches differently that we have. So the short answer is we looked at a number of different rebuilding strategies back in Framework 42, including the median. The council chose the 75% because they wanted to get away from the median, which some people view as flipping a coin on rebuilding success. We estimated what we thought the rebuilding F would be, and it looked like it was going to be lower than FMSY by a considerable amount, but the catch streams at the time still looked what I would call reasonable. You know, they were on the order of several thousand metric tons going forward. Well, now, if 0.02 comes out with a catch of 450 metric tons under the worst assessment model. So, I don't know that we've got a real clear way of predicting how assessments are going to change over the next 4 or 5 years that may affect what our rebuilding strategy risk really is. And that's part of the problem we had with Framework 42 that bears out now.
Okay, thank you. So basically, whether we pick 50 or 75, it is relevant. I mean, I agree with Pat. Given the recent history in Yellowtail, we don't want to go to less probability of success because we're probably going to be wrong anyway no matter what we pick. Extending the time period out there, the extra couple of years, doesn't appear on the face of this to change the results that much either. So it would be kind of a combination of the two, where you could have a 75% chance of success and extend the probability out there a couple of years. And it's still a risk, but I'm not sure that appears to be less risky than taking the 50% probability under any scenario, even keeping it at the 2014, if I've read all this right. I know it's, and I still think it's a guess, basically, because like you said, we don't know what this next stock assessment's going to do. It could turn the whole thing on its head anyway.
Anyone new? I'll go back to you in a sec, Jim. Anyone new? Back to Jim.
Yeah, well, I think Tom's asking us for some input on what we would like him to look at, and just to make it move along, I'm going to make a motion that in addition to the 50 and the 75%, we look at going to 2016 with a 60% probability. And, just to see what it looks like. And I picked 60% not just out of the air because in the TMGC they measure it differently, but I think it comes out to close to 60% probabilities, but they're just looking at the statistics a little bit different when they're doing it. So I'd like to see that 60% probability run and see what it looks like, and then we can compare it to what comes out of the track.
You can get a pretty good idea if you look at Table 2. And if you look at the 2016 column in Table 2 and you look at what's highlighted as 50%, you'll see that, quite honestly, we rounded off all our EPRI builds. We only looked to the 100th. We didn't go to the 1,000th on F because we're not convinced we can measure it that well. So there's a line there that says probability in the year. And that's the actual probability. So, in other words, under the excluding model, an F of 0.19 gives you a probability that you'll rebuild by about 54.7% in 2016. That same value under the including model gives you about a 62% change. So, you know, we can run the 60% again and give you the exact values, but they're going to be somewhat similar to these columns. Under the including model, the numbers are going to be almost identical. Under the excluding model, the numbers are going to be slightly less.
Well, and I see it here, but I still think it would be we should have the 60% in front of us so we can look at it. I mean, I'm looking at it now and as you explain it, but I think it would be we're not going to act on this today, but it would be I think it would be important to have that in there so we can really make an analysis with the new data that comes out of the drive.
Without objection, anyone else? Tom, at what point would it be appropriate to expand the economic analysis here to incorporate the role of yellowtail in the groundfish fishery and, I guess, the scallop fishery down the road?
Well, I certainly don't want to do it for, I shouldn't say I don't. I certainly don't want to ask Eric Thunberg to do it for 50, 60, and 75% under two different models for the three different years. I forget what that works up to. I would prefer not to do it until hopefully after the track when at least with luck, we'll only have one assessment model to worry about, which will cut the analysis in half. But I'll have to talk to Eric because this is not an easy problem for us to address. But the long and short of it is I wouldn't want to do it before July at the very earliest.
If the council doesn't narrow down the alternatives you've presented to us today, were you going to do anything with this until the track anyways?
Probably not.
Okay.
I say probably not. We may do some initial preparation of the framework document to get some of the boilerplate and stuff like that written, but I doubt that we'll do any real analysis. And I can talk to Eric about some of these issues, and we'll probably figure out how we're going to do it, but we're not really planning to do any work or bring any work back until after the track.
Okay, just thinking out loud. I received a letter from Michael O'Connor, I guess last night or this morning, who's the co-chair of the TMGC from Canada, and I haven't had a chance to really read it or actually digest what it is he's saying in the letter. Make sure to get copies of that to the council members. I'm just thinking out loud, maybe we can revisit this issue in April, or maybe we wait until after the track, our first meeting after the track, which is September, I think. Although what I want to do is be sensitive to the PDT. What I read between the lines is, hey, at a certain point, we'd really appreciate you cutting down on things you're not going to pick so we don't have to put tables together for them. So I guess what I'm trying to figure out is it okay if we don't narrow things down right now and maybe wait until April?
I'm not sure what information you're going to want in April to base the narrowing on, but
I'll be quite honest with you, I'm not sure to what degree a lot of the council members put a lot of time into thinking about this table. You know, some other big items on the agenda for this meeting, and I think the benefit of having this discussion with you and hearing some of the questions from some of the council members is give people an opportunity to think about it a little more. Plus, we'll be able to circulate that letter from Canada. I'm not sure what it says. It may not even be relevant to this discussion, but Jimmy.
Well, you know, I agree with you, But it seems to me that we could eliminate the 2015 options. You're only extending it 1 year. Either, no matter which probability level you take, it doesn't do you anything. So there's no sense in us asking the PDT to analyze any of the options that only extends this rebuild 1 year. I mean, I think we could easily agree to do that. That may narrow their workload.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a sense that people are ready to do that, that's fine. I just wasn't picking up that people wanted to make those recommendations. So, in fact, I think we were adding to their list of. Okay. So, I mean, I can go through the whole process of a motion if that's what people want to do, or I can ask if there's objection to striking 2015 from the table. Is there objection? Pat?
I don't know if I object, but I don't feel comfortable having a position, frankly. There are only four options on the table, and if we eliminate the 2016 50% and then eliminate 2015, there's only one option. No, I did. So I think I would object.
We can have a motion and go through the process then if you want. Or we can wait till April. You want to wait till April? Okay, any other questions on this document to Tom about this issue? Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smallwoods, Fisheries Survival Fund. I'm sort of new to this issue, but I was just wondering, in doing a lot of talking to groundfish guys over the last month or so, there are two questions I have, and I'm wondering whether they're going to be dealt with in the analysis. One is, if you choose an action like 2016 at 50%, with the discarding situation there, is there a way to analyze? I don't think the fishing mortality would necessarily change due to that particular action. What you would be doing is you would be changing discard to catch. And I don't know if there's a way to sort of analyze that. I know everybody has high hopes that no one's ever going to discard again, but I've been monitoring some trips, and I know that's not the case. So is there a way to analyze in a particular action like 2016, 50%, whether in fact you're actually changing the fishing mortality or whether you're just converting discards to landings?
I'm not sure how to answer that question. The assessment and the projections take into account all catch. So, the projection really doesn't care whether that's perhaps not quite right, but the projection really doesn't care if it's discards or landings. It says this is catch, this is mortality. That's what we feed in. Most of our discards that are occurring now in the groundfish fishery are due to regulatory trip limits. It's somewhat unknown as to how those discards will change if most of the fishery is operating under sectors. The operating assumption is that the discards will be reduced, but we don't really have a way of predicting by how much at this point. So I think what I'm saying is that whether they're discarded or landed, it's catch in the projection, and that's not going to change the projection results. However, there may be some way to look at it and say, okay, if you allow for higher catch, is it less likely that some of it's going to be turned into discards? And I'd have to talk to other PDT members about that, but that would be outside of the projection results. I mean, a good example is we've done some analysis of various trip limits on other stocks, and we can demonstrate pretty conclusively, both in our analysis and in empirical evidence, that when trip limits go up, discards tend to go down. We might be able to do something like that with this as well.
And the second type of analysis I think would be useful that the scallop exercise over the past month is the issue of market with landings. Apparently now there's extreme limitations on the processing capability of fresh fish. And there would be a very significant difference between a system that maintains low catches until a certain point and then allows a large catch to be landed versus a system that steps up step by step the catch rates and landings to allow the infrastructure to rebuild. I mean, two very different market scenarios that would have great impact on the ground fishery from an economic perspective. And again, I think at this stage of the game, we've really lacked an understanding of market relationships and landing. And I think we have to start incorporating that in at a very early stage in any analysis. It's not as the simple analyses no longer during a period of time where we're reaching rebuilt status in many fisheries. The older approach to the way we do economics is not supporting our decision process. And I think it's going to be important to, early on to look at the ramifications of increasing landings on market based on the ability to process, which right now is probably a very severe restriction. I mean, where we were used to be able to process 1 million pounds a day in some of our key ports, it would be tough to process 50,000 pounds, which means the price of any fish landed plummets if landings exceed that. So I'm just very concerned about holding the stuff in the ocean and then when it reaches some target, all of a sudden have high landings. And that needs to be addressed in these various scenarios. Thank you.
Anything else? Okay. Thanks, Tom. I guess we'll chat again in April. Oh, wait. Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, it was just out of a business on groundfish. If I might have 10 minutes or so of your time, I've come up with a pretty potentially serious issue here with sectors, and my conscience just isn't going to allow it to slide by. Originally, I was just going to let it go and say, fine, in 3 or 4 years, you'll all figure it out and reap what you sow, but I just can't. And the problem here is that, we're used to doing things that, as far as fishermen are concerned, are bad for them, but most people would say we've always done things that are good for the fish in the past. And we may be in a situation now where we're doing something bad for the fish and the fishermen, and that's why I have to bring this forward. It stems from the allocation formula, but this isn't going to be a rehash of that. We're going to settle that in court. As far as I'm concerned, that's done and over with. But the problem is that straight catch history is not representative of catch per unit effort. And because of all the catch restrictions we've had for the last, during that time period. If it was, then people should have got something that represented what actually occurred on the grounds. And I didn't really fully understand this problem. I suspected it, but I couldn't prove it until we got the PSC letters on December 23rd. And people started coming up to me and going, look at this. You know, look at what I got here. You can't catch fish in these proportions. You can't possibly do it. And I agree with them. I mean, some of them are bad. Some of them are just flat out ridiculous. And the problem is what is currently available is not what was available during the qualification period. In other words, the mix of stocks has changed as we've rebuilt stocks. So, you know, catch history is not reflective of what you currently catch. And the result is that the ratio of stock assemblages, and in this case I'm going to use stock assemblages to be fish that tend to swim together, and I'll explain that a little bit in a minute, are grossly out of balance with what the current assemblages are. So, for example, the stock assemblages to me are like cod, haddock, and pollock. You tend to catch the three of them more or less together. Plaice and witch flounder, you tend to catch them more or less together. Yellowtails and blackbacks, you tend to catch them more or less together. And while I don't have access to everybody's PSCs, I only have the ones people have shown me, and those are from New Hampshire mostly, and they're off in the western Gulf of Maine. Those ratios are grossly out of whack. I mean, grossly, grossly out of whack. Some people have 1,400 times the cod they have haddock. You can't do it. You can't go out and catch 30 pounds of haddock for the year. It can't be done. So, you know, for myself, I've started doing some analysis. The study fleet has provided me with my landings by month so I can look at them. And I was hoping to have something for you today, but I simply haven't had the time. It took them a while to put this together, and it's going to take me a while to put it together into a usable format. But I would suggest that the Science Center and some other folks in the scientific community might want to start looking at this. I don't know what access they have to data. You have to do it on an individual boat basis. You can't do it by port or in any kind of aggregate form at all, because every boat has got an individual quota now. So as an example for myself, and I have 70 times the cod I have haddock and 30 times the cod I have pollock. And those aren't ratios that even closely exist out there today. For plaice and witch flounder, I have 3 times the plaice I have witch flounder. And for yellowtails, I have 10 times the yellowtails I have blackbacks. And, you know, those aren't the ratios at all. I mean, I would offer in my area, plaice to witch flounder would be like 1-to-1. And yellowtails to blackbacks would be 5-to-1. So we have this problem is continual. It's not going to go away. And because everything what you get to catch, what your PSC is every year, is basically determined by what happened 3 years ago. That's just the nature of the beast. What we're doing now is based on 2007, 2008, for 2010, 2011. It doesn't represent what's going to be there in 2010 and 2011. So what we need to do is look at the actual catches, something such as the study fleet. That's what I suggested starting there. And have the Science Center do some workups of individual boats to illustrate this problem for the council. Because it creates a number of very serious issues. And the first issue is the issue of discards. And we assume we're going to promote stewardship here. And if a guy's got 30 pounds of haddock and 14,000 pounds of cod, in order for him to remotely catch that 14,000 pounds of cod, he's going to encounter more than 30 pounds of haddock. And what's going to happen to those haddock? Well, on the days when there's an observer there, those haddock will be landed. On the days when there's no observer there, it's going to be just like the good old days in the 70s. Chuck it over. Only in this case, probably gut it and chuck it over so nobody can take a picture of it floating on the surface, because you don't want to leave any evidence behind since it's now illegal. So we're going to be sure it's 100% dead. And my most important point, and this is what I'm really concerned about, is that people will target fish based on complying with the PSCs they've received. Most of us are not lawbreakers. We try to do the best we can with what we've got. And thus the catch will be bigger, older fish. This is the part that is what really leaps off the table at me. And for one thing, the only time these fish tend to aggregate by species, in the round fish anyway, is like large cod. They all tend to stick together. And you know, because they're so large, something like a flounder or a haddock doesn't really want to be around them. So you get a much higher percentage of cod versus the other things. Now, the reason people haven't been able to exclusively target large fish in the past is they didn't have enough time to look for them. They went out, they caught whatever they could catch as fast as they could, and they went home. Now time doesn't matter anymore. We can ride around the ocean for hours to some degree. I mean, obviously fuel comes into it at some point. But we can go out there and look around, and all the closures, it isn't like you can close the ocean for every aggregation of large cod. Yes, they aggregate at spawning times, but after they get done spawning, there's still aggregations of large cod, as any fisherman here will tell you. And all you got to do is find them. And they're usually on top of some hump somewhere. And you just ride around till you mark them. You turn around, you whack the hell out of it. And you hopefully get about 99% large cod. And the same with the flats. You know, if large gray sole are $5 a pound, small gray soles are 90 cents, and I got hardly any of them in the first place, I may as well get a 10-inch cod in and go tow around just to catch large fish. So what I'm afraid is going to happen, and it'll take this council 3 or 4 years to pick up on it, is that we've unleashed market forces here that nobody even remotely understands. And those market forces are going to take the age structure out of our fishery that we've just spent the last 15 years trying to create under Days at Sea. And I might add, we've been pretty successful. And so that's the problem. I don't have a solution. I just want to make sure everybody understands what the problem is and where we're potentially headed and how 3 or 4 years from now we could have a grossly aged, truncated fishery again. And we'll have done it with market forces. So, I'll be happy to answer questions or whatever, but I just wanted to lay out the problem for the council.
Dr. Pierce?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, ask David a question. Yeah, David, I think your fears are probably well-founded. You were a very experienced ground fisherman who are looking into the future in the not-too-distant future, so it does pose obvious problems for all concerned, the fishermen as well as the resource. But my question is, this is relative to the first point that you made about the species mix, the percentages being out of whack with the amount fishermen actually have as an allocation. You're in a sector, right? Would it be possible for you to acquire the fish that you don't have from another sector? That is the concept of sectors in trading ACE or leasing ACE. So do you envision that as a possibility? And if not, why wouldn't it work?
That's the issue. We're not aware of any place to acquire, especially haddock. We'd have to acquire hundreds of thousands of pounds of haddock, and it simply isn't there. It is a little bit confounding to me how in a fully rebuilt stock we can be generating numbers like 30 pounds for a fisherman in the Gulf of Maine, a haddock. I really have had a hard time understanding that. I know I got 1,300 pounds. I've fished, the same boat, the same thing, this whole period. I know what the basic problem is. The problem, you couldn't establish catch history on haddock because back in the mid-90s, there were no haddock to establish the history on, first of all. And then as soon as some haddock started to show up, we put in the roll enclosures, and that's when you can catch the haddock. And so it wasn't until the Western Gulf of Maine area filled up with haddock and they started to spill out that they became available more or less year-round. And it's only been, in the last 2 or 3 years that they've really become pretty much ubiquitous. And if you combine that with the fact that we, gave the recreational fishery 30% of the haddock, you get this collision of events. Now, I could also argue that it might only be one stock of haddock and that most of the spillover is actually off of Georges Bank and that we shouldn't even have a separate Gulf of Maine haddock tack, that it should just be a haddock tack, and then the problem would go away because there'd be plenty for everybody. But given that we've still dividing it up, even though, I've looked at some DNA work that doesn't tend to indicate they're separate fish, I have to deal with what is, not what could be. And as I said, this is what is, at least in the two New Hampshire sectors that I'm aware of. And, if we put all our haddock together, it just doesn't come to anything. And, maybe there's a sector out there somewhere that wants to trade, but so far I'm not aware of it. Everybody's trying to buy fish. I haven't heard of anybody trying to sell them. And the idea that, has been put forward by sector proponents that, 40 boats will be in a sector and only 3 of them will go fishing, at least in New Hampshire, that's not the case. Everybody in our sector is planning on actively fishing. None of them got enough fish to even reach cover their expenses. Not one boat in New Hampshire that I'm aware of can cover their short-term expenses. But everybody plans to fish and hope the insanity somehow disappears after a year. But, right now, as of, May 1st, it won't be May 1st, it'll be June 1st, I guess, all these boats will probably set sail and they'll all encounter haddock. And if you don't have an observer on every one of those boats, a good percentage of those haddock are going back over the side. That's human, even people that are Boy Scouts, people like me, that have never broken a law in their life, we're on the verge of starvation here. We've got to really weigh some really Hobbesian choices here as to what we do. And again, I'm just trying to make you aware, don't shoot the messenger, but that is the message.
Okay, thanks, Dave. We're all set, Tom? Okay. Next agenda item, SSC committee report. Report.